You travel with a truth witch named Safiya. Isolde's gut went tight. The ice along her spine slashed outward. With every bit of strength and training Isolde could muster, she slammed down on her emotions, her thoughts, and every fragment of knowledge that threatened to rise to the surface. But she was too slow. The shadow sensed her fear and lunged for it.
You do. You do. You must to have such a wild response.
Oh, Lady Fate favors me today. This was all so much easier than I expected. Happiness rippled off the shadow. Isolde imagined it was clapping its delight. Now you must stay alive, little Thread Witch.
Yes.
Can you manage that?
I will need you again when the time comes.
Time? Isolde thought, unable to speak. Until we meet again, the shadow trilled. Then the dark presence swept away, and Isolde awoke to the real world. The next several minutes were a blur of the monk helping Isolde sit up, of Safi's threads flaring from across the room, of the world spinning and swaying.
Safi,
I'm here, Is. Isolde relaxed slightly, until the monk inspected her bandage. Then it took all of Isolde's self-control not to shriek at her to get the hell away. Oh, Moon Mother, save her. How could there be so much pain?
You are very ill indeed.
That was what the shadow voice had said, and watching the frightened gray threads that flickered over both the monk and Safi, Isolde had no doubt the voice was right. What she didn't know, though, was whether the voice was real. Isolde grabbed for the monk's wrist.
Will I die?
The monk went very still. You could die. The muscle is cursed, but I am doing all I can to keep the blood clean. Isolde almost laughed at that. Corlant must have cursed his arrow.
No wonder he looked so smug after shooting me.
He'd known the wound would kill her in the end. Though, why? The reason why Corlant wanted Isolde dead was still lost to her. If he'd truly only craved revenge against Gretcha and Alma, then he wouldn't have so blatantly aimed his arrow at Isolde. It was more than Isolde could sort through right now. Too many thoughts, confusing and contradictory. No mental strength to carry it all.
Water will help.
The monk dipped her head to a water bag. Please try to drink while I find food. She rolled to her feet and glided from the room. Isolde swiveled her head towards Safi. For a flicker of a heartbeat, Isolde almost wished she could cry, could squeeze out a few teardrops as easily as the rest of the world, just so Safi would know how relieved Isolde was to have her there.
You're chained up.
A wince pulled at Safi's eyes.
I upset the Admiral.
Of course you did. It's not funny. Safi sank against the wall, her threads pulsing between the same gray and concerned green.
Things are bad, Is. But I'll fix them, all right? I swear I'll fix them. If Rain has promised to help us.
Evrain. So that was the monk's name. Evrain. So plain and unassuming.
What happened to you, Is? How did you get hurt?
Isolde loosed a ragged breath.
Later,
she murmured.
I'll explain later. Tell me how we got here.
Safi threw a cautious glance at the door before lowering her voice.
It all started in Vinyatsa City, right after Habim sent you away.
As Safi described what had passed, Isolde found it harder and harder to stay tethered to the real world, to pick out the details that mattered.
Chocolate strawberries? Not important,
she decided hazily. But dancing with Prince Merrick of Nubrevna?
Important.
And being named the betrothed of Henrik von Kartora? All because the Emperor might know about Safi's magic?
Wait!
Isolt cut in, blinking against the pain in her arm.
You're the Emperor's betrothed. Does that make you the Empress of Kartora?
No, Safi blurted. Then more calmly,
Uncle Aaron said I wouldn't have to marry Henrik. But if Henrik knows about your magic, then what does that mean? Who else knows?
I don't know. Safi's forehead pinched up. Then, in an even faster rush of words, she finished her tale. But the second half of the story was more confusing than the first, and Isolt couldn't seem to move past the betrothal. If Safi became Empress, then Isolt would have nowhere to go. The door clicked open. Evrain slipped in with a bowl. Why, Evrain hissed at Safi, does my patient look twice as pale as when I left? You have exhausted her, Domna.
I'm always pale as death,
Isolt said, winning a taut smile from Safi. When at last Evrain had deemed Isolt sufficiently fed, she eased Isolt onto her back. Then Safi lifted her voice, chains rattling.
I'll find a fire witch healer, Is, all right? I swear to you I will, and I swear that you will get better. Oath accepted,
Isolt breathed. Her eyes were too heavy to keep open, so she let them flutter shut.
If you don't find a healer, Saf, and I die, I promise to haunt you for the rest of your miserable life.
Safi's laugh burst out, over loud, and Isolt's eyelids briefly popped wide. Safi's threads were hysterically white. But ah, Evrain was smiling. That was nice. It warmed Isolt's heart ever so slightly. Isolt felt the woman's hand rest upon her brow. A heartbeat passed, and despite the squeaking of the ship's wood, Evrain's magic quickly towed Isolt beneath sleeping waves. 24. When Merrick stepped onto the main deck to send Cullen after Vivia, and to send the Janna surging behind, he found a haze of purple clouds bruising the evening sky. Rain would come eventually, but for now the air was thick and still, the sort of breezeless calm that left witchless ships stranded. As Merrick's crew had done the night before, the sailors of the Janna were organized in rows across the deck. All except Ryber, who stood beside the wind drum, her gaze anchored on Cullen at the ship's bow. Merrick stifled a sigh at seeing Ryber like that. He'd have to remind her to keep such open regard masked. He knew what she and Cullen shared, but the rest of the men didn't, and couldn't. Not if Ryber wanted to stay stationed on this ship and in Merrick's crew. Merrick marched to the quarter-deck to gaze over his men. Unlike the night before, there was no need for silence. So Merrick forced a grin, one like he used to flash when it was just he and his tiny crew sailing the soil-bound waters of New Brevna. "Give us a song to sail by," he roared. "How about the All Island to start?" The All Island was a favorite, and several of the sailors matched Merrick's smile as he strode to the wind drum and accepted the unmagicked mallet from Ryber. Neither she nor any of the crew knew what they sailed toward, and as much as Merrick would like to think they would oppose Vivia's piracy, he wasn't entirely sure. Merrick hammered the drum four times, and on the fifth beat, the men of the Janna began to sing. 14 days did they fight the storm, 14 days did they brave the wind, 14 days without ocean's calm, saw the men of the old island, hey! 13 days did they pitch and yaw, 13 days did they pray for end, 13 days of sailing on, saw the men of the Ol Island. As the crew's salt-rusted voices blended into the third verse, Merrick handed the mallet to Ryber and moved into position beside the three Tide Witches. Cullen chose that moment to launch himself off the deck, wind roaring in his wake. He was soon nothing but a speck on the horizon. The youngest of the Tide Witches offered Merrick wind spectacles. And once Merrick had them strapped on, and once the world had become a bubbled, warped place, he barked, "Gather your waters, men!" As one, the Tide Witch's chests expanded, Merrick's too, and with his inhale came the familiar power. No rage sparked beneath it. Merrick felt as calm as a tide pool. Then Merrick and the Tide Witches exhaled. Wind swirled around Merrick's legs. Waves rippled inward toward the ship. "Prepare tides!" Merrick bellowed. And the elemental charge inside him eased out, ignited the air around him. "Make way!" In a great suction of power, the magic left Merrick's body. A boiling, dry wind gusted over the ship, snapped into the sails. At the same moment, the Tide Witch's waters thrust against the Jana's waterline and the ship lurched forward. Merrick's knees wobbled, and he was struck by how much more smoothly these launches went with Cullen in control.
"9 days of a sea fox chasin', 9 days of tooth and fin, 9 days of jaws a-snappin', saw the men of the Ol Island. Hey!"
Merrick fell into the rhythm of the shanty and the beat of the wind drum. The power pulsed through him, strangely smooth, uncommonly vast. For once in his life, he felt as if he had more magic than he knew what to do with. And as the Tide Witches sang softly, Merrick's winds filled the Jana's sails. Soon he lifted his voice in song.
4 days without fresh water, 4 days with none to drink, 4 days of salt and hot air, saw the men of the Ol Island.
The shanty soon ended, but Ryber kept pounding the drum and hollered, "The maidens north of Lovatz!" Which Merrick knew was her favorite song, since she was a maiden from north of Lovatz. 4 beats later, the chorus of sailors resumed, and onward the Jana moved, cutting the seas like a needle through sailcloth and never losing sight of Cullen's small shape. Until Cullen wasn't small anymore. Until he was zooming in so fast that Merrick thought they would collide. Cullen slowed, slowed, and then toppled onto the deck, sailors scattering from his path.
"It isn't a Dalmati ship," he roared, straggling to his feet.
Then he was racing to the tiller to Merrick, his face violently red.
"Vivia has already attacked. And it's not a trade ship at all."
Merrick blinked stupidly at those words. They were incomprehensible, gibberish beneath the blood now rushing into his skull.
"Not a trade ship?"
"No," Cullen panted. "It's a Marstaki naval galleon. And it's carrying weapons and fire witches."
Safi stared out the window at lavender skies and peaceful seas. Ever since Evrain had stormed into the cabin, snarling about "Vivia, that bitch," Safi had stretched her chains and moored her attention to the glass. The terrain was changing shape before her eyes. Possibly her opponents, too. Merrick had mentioned fighting, and Safi could only assume they sailed straight for it. All the while, Evrain paced, unleashing her worry to no one in particular, yet doing it in time to the pounding drum. Isolde simply slept on. At last, Safi's vigil was rewarded. A smear of dark shapes formed on the horizon, eventually solidifying into a Nubrevnan warship like Merrick's, and a second ship with a hull so dark it was almost black. Safi tugged against her chains, her arms bending back until she was close enough to the window to fully inspect the black ship. Three masts, snapped in half, a flag falling over the bulwark. She caught her breath. There was no mistaking the gold crescent moon on that flag. It was the symbol of the Empire of Marstock, and the green background made it the standard of the Marstocki Navy.
"Oh, bad shit,"
Safi whispered. "Does Vivia think," Evrain said to no one in particular, "that there will be no retaliation from Dalmati? Piracy does not go ignored, especially not from a naval empire."
"I don't think Dalmati will retaliate," Safi said.
Evrain paused mid-stride, and Safi pointed to the window, chains clattering.
"The ship she attacked is from the Marstocki Navy."
"Wells preserve us," the monk breathed. Then she lurched to the window and her face paled. "What have you done, Vivia?" Safi pressed her face to the glass beside Evrain. New Brevnan sailors marched men in Marstocki green across a gangway. The Marstock's wrists were bound, and they were near enough for Safi to see solid triangles on more than a few hands. Witch marks. Fire witch marks.
"Why are none of the fire witches fighting back?"
Safi would never not use her magic to save herself or her friends. Her legs started bouncing, more questions flying through her mind.
"And why are the Marstocks being led off their ship?"
"I assume," Evrain said, resuming her frantic pacing, "that Vivia intends to claim the Marstocki vessel and all its contents, then abandon her own ship. Because of the truce, she cannot kill the Marstocks outright." Nodding slowly, Safi thought back to Uncle Aaron and his enormous plan to stop the Great War. Was this the sort of act that would dissolve the truce early? Was this what he'd hoped to prevent? Safi had no idea and no way of knowing, so she shifted her attention back to the Marstocks shambling onto Vivia's ship. There weren't many fire witches, but enough to easily fight back against the princess's crew. In fact, one bearded man seemed vicious enough to save his whole ship. He snarled and snapped at every new Brevnan prodding him over the gangway. Then Safi caught sight of his triangular witch mark. There was a hollow circle at the center.
"They have a fire witch healer," she said,
voice husky with shock. "Perhaps," Evrain murmured.
"Not perhaps," Safi insisted. "I see the mark on his hand. He just crossed the gangway onto the other ship."
Evrain rounded on Safi, eyes wide. "You are sure of what you saw?"
"Hi."
Safi slouched back from the window, her chains slackening. She suddenly saw what she needed to do. The plan was all there before her. She knew where to walk below decks, how to sneak about topside, and which sailors to avoid.
"We can get to the Fire Witch," she said, "while everyone is distracted. We can bring him here."
"No." Evrain's lips puckered into a grim line. "We cannot bring an enemy sailor onto this ship. That goes too far, even for me.
Yet we can reverse your plan and bring Isolde to the healer."
The monk withdrew a key from her cloak and held it up. Safi gasped.
"How did you get that?"
"I stole it from Merrick." She flashed a humorless grin and pushed to her feet. "Unlock yourself, and then wake up Isolde.
While I ensure the coast is clear, you need to get her standing.
We will have only one chance to make a run for it." Safi nodded, release winding through her shoulders, through her legs. She was finally acting. And even better, she was running. That was something she knew how to do well. In the back of her mind, though, something poked and scratched. Merrick would be furious over this. After all, she was putting his contract at risk, and he'd already chained her up for that. But the consequences were worth it. Isolde was worth it. So, with a bolstering breath, Safi plucked the key from Evrain's hand. Then, as the monk darted from the cabin, Safi slipped the key into her first manacle. It opened with a satisfying clink. Merrick flew to the Marstaki war galley, moving so fast that he left his stomach behind. Cullen soared beside him, almost invisible in the wildness of their winds. Yet through it all, Merrick still managed to pick out Vivia. Stocky and dark-haired like Merrick, she roared orders beside a gangway connecting the Marstaki galleon to her ship. New Brevnan sailors led submissive Marstaks across and then organized them in seated rows across the main deck. Merrick's feet touched down, yet he didn't toe in his magic. Instead, he spun once and lashed it across the deck. It spun around his sister, yanking her to Merrick. But she only grinned, landing gracefully beside her brother. "You lied," he growled, tearing off his wind spectacles, "about what the miniature was." "And you lied about where it was." Dimly, Merrick was aware of sailors fleeing, as if a giant wave might be spiraling toward him. But Vivia's magic was slow and Merrick's rage all-consuming. He freed his pistol and pressed it to her head. "You wouldn't dare," she snarled. Water splashed as she abandoned her wave. "I am your sister and your future queen."
"You aren't queen yet. Return these men to their ship."
"No."
The word was almost lost to the wind, the voices.
"New Brevna needs weapons, Mary."
"New Brevna needs food."
Vivia only laughed, a crowing sound that had mocked Merrick his entire life.
"There is a war coming. Stop being so naive and start caring about your countrymen."
Her words broke off as Merrick cocked his pistol, readying the Fire Witch spell within.
"Never,"
he hissed. "Say that I don't care for my countrymen. I fight to keep them alive, but you, you'll bring the fires of Marstock upon their heads.
What you have done here violates the 20-year truce. I will present you to the Visors and King Seraphin for punishment."
"Except that it doesn't violate it," Vivia snapped, lips curling back. "So don't get all formal on me, Mary. No one is hurt. My crew has peacefully escorted the Marstaks onto my ship, which I will give up to ensure the truce stays intact."
"Your crew will escort the Marstaks right back. We leave this vessel, Vivia, and we leave its contents."
With a final thrust of muscle and magic, Merrick spun on his heel, ready to end this peaceful escort.
"So will you tell Father, then?" Vivia shouted. "Will you tell him that you lost the ship he sought?"
Merrick's feet stopped, and he angled back toward his sister. Her eyes, dark and identical to Merrick's, blazed.
"What did you say?"
She bared her teeth in a full smile.
"Who do you think ordered that miniature, Mary? This was all Father's idea and Father's orders."
"Lies!"
Merrick burst forward, pistol rising. A wall of wind blasted him. He stumbled, almost fell, and then hazily thought,
"Cullen."
A second wind returned his balance, and his sanity, too. His thread brother, wherever the hell he was finally putting a stop to something Merrick never should have begun. Never would have begun if there weren't so much at stake. This was his sister for Noden's sake. Cullen reeled into Merrick's path, eyes huge and face red.
"We have a situation,"
Cullen panted.
"It's bad."
He gestured weakly toward the galleon's mizzen mast and kicked into a jog. Merrick sprinted after him. All thoughts of Vivia or his father gone, swallowed by a new tide of fear.
I thought it odd,
Cullen yelled between gulps for air,
that there was only a skeleton crew here. There's no way this ship could have crossed the Jadansi with so few men. So I checked below decks.
He skirted the ladder, pointing as he passed.
There were more men. I don't understand,
Merrick shouted over his pounding feet.
You think what? That some of the crew left? Exactly.
Cullen slowed to a stop beside the broken mizzen mast. His chest trembled much too fast as he added,
I think most of this crew boarded other ships, and then these men. Well, look for yourself.
He pointed to the mast, which was broken at Merrick's chest level. Then Cullen waved to something else, something resting against the balustrade only a few feet away. Two axes. Merrick's stomach turned to iron.
They cut the mast themselves.
Shit. Shit. Vivia was ambushed. Admiral!
Ryber's voice carried over the still air.
Admiral!
She shouted again. And Merrick found he was getting awfully tired of that title,
of the weight that crashed onto him each time someone uttered the word.
We have four warships on the horizon, hulls up and coming this way.
Merrick exchanged a single wide-eyed look with Cullen. Then he launched back to the main deck, back to his sister, who continued to march Marstox onto her ship. But Merrick had no time for fury or new orders, for at that moment, Herman stumbled to the edge of the Jonna and roared through cupped hands,
It's the Marstox, Admiral! They're calling for the immediate surrender of Emperor Henrik's betrothed! Else they'll sink us!
Merrick rushed to the railing.
They want who?
They want the Emperor's betrothed!
Herman paused, eyes burning pink with his magic. Then he added,
Safia von Hastral!
It was as if the whole world slowed down, as if it sucked in a breath and held tight. The waves rolled sluggishly as mud, the ship rocked at half speed.
Safia von Hastral, Emperor Henrik's betrothed. It made such sudden clear sense.
Why she had fled Vinyatsa City, why her safety was worth a treaty with the Hastrals, and why a blood witch might be after her. Yet Merrick couldn't wrap his mind around it. If she was betrothed to Henrik, then that made her the future Empress of Kartora. It made her Henrik's property, too. And why were Merrick's lungs dropping low at that thought? Footsteps hammered on the wood. Cullen appeared, cheeks flushed so red a breathing attack had to be imminent. With that terrifying realization, the world surged back to its usual speed. Merrick grabbed Cullen's arm.
Are you all right?
Fine, Cullen snapped.
What do you need?
I need you on the Jonna so we can...
Merrick hesitated, the words for his next command suddenly vanishing in a surge of doubt.
So we can, Cullen prompted. Hand over the Domna,
Merrick finally said. He didn't like it, but it was one life versus many.
Escort Safia topside and give her up to the Marstox.
Cullen set his jaw, gaze darkening but no argument coming forth. He may have disagreed, but he was still saluting and following orders. He rocketed off the Marstocky deck. Merrick spun around, summoning commands for Vivia and her crew. But his words died on his tongue. New Brevnan sailors were streaming below the Marstocky galleon's deck, and six witches stood in a row, eyes trained on Vivia. That row included Merrick's Tide Witches.
Gather your winds and waters,
Vivia bellowed, Merrick lunged, using his wind to cross the ship in mere breaths. He slammed down beside his sister.
What the hell are you doing? As your admiral, I ordered you to release the Marstocks and return to your ship.
Vivia sneered. And we all know that I should have been named admiral. Look around you, Mary. She waved to the Tide Witches. You have lost father's men, and I have gained an arsenal. Merrick's breath choked off at those words, at the reality of what faced him. His ship, his command, and everything he'd worked for were dissolving before his eyes, taken by the same sister who'd always crushed him beneath her boot heel.
There will be consequences, he said,
voice low but words desperate, pleading even.
Someone, somewhere will demand blood for what you're doing.
Perhaps, she shrugged, a movement so casual it showed her true feelings more than words ever could. At least I will have protected our people, though, just as I will be the one to bring the empires to their knees.
Vivia turned her back on Merrick. Prepare Tides, men! We sail to the sentries of Noden to deliver our new weapons!
A distant boom rang out. Merrick jerked toward the horizon, to where the four Marstocki war galleons now sailed, and to where cannonballs sped for the Jana. Merrick had just enough time to thrust his winds frantically out. The cannonballs dropped into the sea. Merrick leaped off the Marstocki ship and flew to the Jana's main deck. His knees crunched. He transferred the power into a roll, then he was on his feet and screaming for Herman.
Tell the Marstocks we surrender. Tell them to cease their fire and we'll hand over the Domna.
The voice which limped onto the main deck, eyes glowing pink and lips moving furiously. Merrick scanned his ship and his crew, heart rising as he counted the gaps. Not all of his father's sailors had abandoned him. Merrick's original crew had remained. A second boom thundered. Merrick pitched around, grabbing ineffectually for enough magic to stop the cannon fire. Wind cycloned out, but not from Merrick, from Cullen. The first mate was dragging to Merrick's side and heaving his witchery outward. Merrick had no time to thank Cullen or to fret over Cullen's lungs.
Why aren't the Marstocks stopping? He roared at Herman. Tell them they can have the girl.
Herman's head was wagging.
They say the girl isn't enough now. They want their ship back, Admiral.
With a shaking hand, Herman pointed to the Marstocki galleon. Despite its broken masts, it was sailing toward New Brevna on tide-witched waves. And with no witches of his own, it was Merrick who would be left behind to pay the price.
25. Isolt came hazily into consciousness, wondering why the world stank of dead fish. Why the ceiling had turned to cloudy purple skies, and why her arm was on fire. A whimper crawled from her throat. She opened her eyes and instantly screamed. A man bowed over her, his curly beard so massive it fell on her stomach. His hands rested on her wounded arm, and whatever he did, it hurt like the hell gates.
Isolt yelped again and tried to wriggle free.
Hush,
Safi whispered, her hands firmly gripping Isolt's shoulder.
He's healing you.
The muscle is repairing, murmured Evrain from Isolt's other side, and it will only get worse before it gets better. With a tight swallow, her throat was so dry, Isolt looked back at the bearded healer. His threads were a concentrated green, though they shivered with annoyed shades of red.
He was healing her,
but he wasn't pleased about it.
That was when Isolt noticed the ropes around his wrists.
They were almost hidden beneath his voluminous sleeves. He was a prisoner. And yes, now that she focused beyond the healer, she saw other threads spinning with annoyance and the occasional furious crimson. Beneath the threads were men in rows, their uniforms the same as the healer's. She angled back to Safi.
Is this the prince's ship? No, it's his sister's ship, actually.
A boom exploded in the distance.
What was that?
Isolt croaked.
Safi's threads flashed with guilty rust.
We're, under attack by our Marstaki naval fleet.
Apparently, Evrain said in a steely tone. Your friend is betrothed to the Emperor of Kartora, so now the Marstaks are after her.
Another thunderous boom echoed into Isolt's ears. Safi threw a frantic glance toward the ocean.
They're approaching fast.
She switched to Marstaki, angling back to the healer.
Hurry, or you will taste a Kerowin's sword.
He most certainly will not, Evrain inserted.
And a Kerowin's stiletto.
He will not feel that either, but...
Evrain shifted into the Marstaki language, too.
We will all drown if you do not finish quickly.
The man sneered.
I can only work so fast. This wretched Nomatsi has the flesh of demon spawn.
In a move too quick to prevent, Safi ripped a knife from Evrain's baldric and thrust it against the man's neck.
Say that again, and you die.
The man's glare deepened, but he also put new effort into his work. More cannon fire sounded, but it seemed 1,000 miles away, as did the stink of dead fish and the tickling of the healer's beard. At last, Safi's voice cut through Isolt's pain.
You're finished? The wound is healed?
Yes, though she will need time to recover.
But she will not die?
No, unfortunately. Matsi filth.
The man's voice choked off, replaced by a howl, and the feel of his beard vanished from Isolt's stomach. Just as Isolt's vision started to sharpen and clear, Safi shoved the healer toward the other sailors.
Damn you! She spat after him. Son of a void witch! May you tumble through the hell gates forever! That's enough, Isolt said.
She tried to stand. Evrain crouched low, offering her a hand. No, offering her something in her hand. A short cord with a tiny pain stone.
This will numb you until the healer's magic is finished.
She slipped the cord over Isolt's right wrist. The stone flared to life, and the pain washed back. Fresh energy coursed through her, and she even managed a smile for Evrain as she stood. The instant Isolt reached her feet, though, a sharp light filled her eyes. She couldn't see a thing for the silver radiance of it, vibrating and swirling, flashing with lines of purple hunger and black death.
Threads?
Isolt realized, fear and awe mingling together. The largest threads she had ever seen, at least half the length of the boat. And oddest of all, they seemed to come from beneath the hull, underwater.
Something's coming, she whispered. Something massive and hungry.
Evrain stiffened. Then she grabbed Isolt's shoulder.
Can you see animal threads?
No.
The silver and black were so bright, so fast.
But what else would be under the boat?
Noden, save us,
Evrain breathed.
The sea foxes are hit.
The last of Evrain's words were lost in an explosion of water and sound. The warship tipped back as something huge, something monstrous, crashed up from the sea. Water rained down, and the bound Marstaks shouted their terror. But Isolt barely noticed the sailors. All she saw was the creature before her, A serpent as wide as the ship's mast snaked from the waves toward the starboard prow. Rather than scales, it wore thick silver fur, and its head was shaped like a fox's, though 20 times larger than any normal fox. As it snapped its jaw and swiveled toward the warship, Izzult saw more teeth than any natural creature should possess. And fangs. The thing most definitely had fangs. But what scared Izzult the most was how the creature blazed with the threads of the bloodthirsty, and how its mouth was opening wide. The creature screamed. When Ryber had described a sea fox, this was not what Safi had imagined. And she definitely hadn't imagined that it would scream like the souls of the damned. A thousand layers screeched from the monster's mouth, and then screeched from a second monster now towering over the Janna nearby. Safi's eardrums split, and she was vaguely aware of her pulse ramping up. She flung a glance toward the Janna, searching for Merrick across the foaming sea, but her search was short-lived when the nearest fox's shriek broke off. It had found a target. One of the Marstocks closest to the ship's rail. The man's hands sparked and sputtered as he reached for his witchery, but with his wrists bound, he was too clumsy to fight back. Safi scrambled to her feet, thrust out her knife, and roared, "Leave him alone!" The sea fox whipped its long neck Safi's way. "Shit!" Safi had just enough time to admire the icy blue of the monster's eyes, zooming in fast, before she flung out her throwing knife. It stabbed an inky pupil, and the sea fox flipped down, screaming, to splash beneath the water. The boat tipped dangerously, but the sea fox didn't resurface. Safi flung a desperate glance at the Janna and found the second sea fox had left as well. "Nice job," called Izzult. She stepped carefully across the main deck, clearly not in possession of her sea legs. A cleaver gleamed in her left hand. Safi's heart soared into her skull. Seeing Izzult, standing tall, no matter if her energy was from the painstone, made Safi want to laugh in relief. Or cry. Probably both. But it was Izzult's eyes that really got her. They were bright, and they were open. "New weapon?" Safi asked, her voice embarrassingly pinched and thick. Izzult's lips quirked up. "I have to save your hide somehow." Safi's throat squeezed tighter. "Carowind steel is the best, you know."
"It is," Evrain growled, stalking toward the girls, sea legs strong against the boat's trembling. "And you, Domna," she glared at Safi, "just wasted that steel on making the monster angrier."
"I got rid of it," Safi motioned to the now empty waves.
"No, that is how they hunt."
Evrain unsheathed a second throwing knife.
"They test the ship. See how we fight. Then they dive. As we speak, both foxes are swimming for the surface, building momentum as they go. They will try to unbalance the boats and grab any men who fall."
Safi's mouth dropped open. Salty air swept in.
"You mean it's coming back?"
"Yes." She shoved the knife at Safi. "So take this knife and widen your stances, fools!"
Safi snatched up the knife just as Izzult cried,
"Here it comes!"
Wood exploded in a deafening crunch. The boat tipped sharply left, left. Safi angled her body into the deck, against the ship's rise. Screams ripped out behind her. Marstocki sailors tumbled for the water, and with their hands bound, they would fall right in. Safi and Izzult locked eyes, and Safi knew her thread sister thought the same thing. As one, they stopped fighting the rise of the ship, and instead, they fell into it. The wood grabbed at Safi's bare soles,
locked her down and forced her into tiny, bouncing hops behind Isolde, whose boots slid more easily over the wet planks. Isolde reached the other side first, and with a roar, she grabbed at a green tunic right before its owner toppled overboard. It was the bearded fire witch healer.
"Not so filthy now, huh?"
Safi shouted. But then, a cry burst up. A second Marstok, just a boy, fell toward the railing. Safi dove for him. He flipped over the edge. Safi flipped after. She snagged his ankle, and then Isolde snagged hers.
"I've got you,"
Isolde gritted, hugging the railing with her bad arm.
"Not for long, though. Oh, shit!"
The boat stopped tipping. Gravity took hold, and the ship fell the other way in a howl of water and resisting wood. Safi and the boy swung onto the boat, Isolde shrieking from the pain of holding on, until Evrain was there, somehow still on her feet and towing Safi upright. The sea fox burst from the waves, way too close to where Isolde was scrabbling back. Safi threw her knife. It punched into the fox's eye, inches away from the first knife. The monster shrieked and dove once more. Salt water rained down, the ship pitching all the more wildly. Safi pulled Isolde to her feet. Isolde's right arm hung limp, her face creased with pain, though she still managed to yell,
"Nice aim! Except I was going for the other eye!"
"Stop doing that!"
Evrain shouted several paces away and with the young Marstok beside her.
"You're wasting my knives!"
Her sword arced out. She slashed the boy's bindings.
"And stop standing there. We need to free these men while we can."
Isolde nodded tiredly and staggered for the nearest set of sailors. But Safi was, yet again, weaponless. Evrain unbuckled her last throwing knife.
"Don't lose this, Domna."
"Yes, yes."
Safi seized it and twisted for the nearest sailor. With three quick hacks, she had him unbound. She moved to the next man, then the next. One after another, she freed them from their ropes. The unbound men went on to help their comrades, while a handful of free fire witches moved into a defensive square formation at the center of the deck. Safi spared a glance toward the water, still empty, and toward the Janna. The sea fox that had terrorized it was also nowhere to be seen. For half a moment, Safi thought maybe the monsters had given up the hunt. But then Isolde shrieked out,
"Here it comes! Southern side!"
Southern side. The exact side on which Safi now sawed through a sailor's ropes.
Shit, shit, shit!
She cut through the last of the fibers and the man scrabbled away. The sea fox erupted from the waves, flinging its head over the railing. Teeth hurtled in. Teeth and swirling eyes and a scream to crush her skull. It was going to eat her. It would snap her body in half and swallow her. Wind slammed into Safi's chest. Into her legs, she spun wildly back away from the monster's maw. As sea and sky and ship blurred together with fire witch flames, she spotted Merrick flying at her. Gratitude, relief, surged through her. Safi hit the deck, as did he, on top of her. Then, as the boat hitched the other way, he rolled off and thundered,
"What the hell are you doing here?"
Safi blinked, briefly stunned. Then she scrabbled up and shouted,
"You're giving me to the Marstoks!"
"Not anymore, I'm not."
He unsheathed his cutlass, and in a blur of steel, he sliced through Marstoki bindings, one after the other. And as he moved, he yelled,
"Norden has favored me, Domna, and only a fool ignores such gifts."
"Gifts?"
she squawked, sawing at an old man's ropes and eyeing the waters.
"How is a thrice-damned sea fox a gift?"
"Stop talking."
Merrick pointed to the ship's ladder.
Go below and stay out of the way.
Don't do that,
Isolt cried, stumbling toward Safi with Evrain on her heels. Her breath was ragged, her face pinched.
The fox is going for the back. We need to reach the men at the front.
Without another word, they all bolted for the ship's fore. Safi and Isolt yanked man after man from the railing and shoved them at Evrain and Merrick, who sliced rope after rope. The fire witches stayed in their tight formation, ready to fight. But the fox was much, much too fast for the fire witches, or anyone else. It crashed into the ship's aft. Wood cracked. And as the ship tipped violently up, Safi tried to keep from plummeting into the sea. Water exploded from the front of the ship. The second sea fox reared up, shrieking and hurtling close, ready to pluck man after man off the exposed deck, flaming flesh or no. Safi looked at Isolt. Her thread sister nodded. As before, the girls stopped fighting the vertical rise, and together they barreled down the deck, right for the sea fox's mouth. Safi hit the railing. It was almost parallel to the waves now, and straightened to her fullest height. Her knife slashed through furry jaw. Blood rained down. Then Isolt was there, whirling low along the bulwark. Her cleaver bit deep into the monster's neck. The sea fox jolted, head dropping. More blood spurted as Isolt turned her cleaver high while Safi twirled in low, pushing all her strength into the perfect thrust of her knife. The creature's mouth fell wide. Safi let the knife loose. It flew straight and true into the fox's throat. And Isolt's cleaver thrust out. It sliced through the monster's forehead. The sea fox screamed, a raw final sound, before it sank beneath the waves. The first sea fox released its hold on the ship. Safi and Isolt had just enough time to latch onto the railing and not get catapulted into the sea when the warship dropped. Waves sprayed, men rolled and tumbled, but Safi and Isolt clung tight. Until at last the ship's heaving settled down, until at last Safi could scrabble to Isolt and drag her thread sister upright.
How are you? Where does it hurt?
Everywhere,
Isolt cracked a smile.
It's not a strong pain stone.
Before Safi could yell for Evrain's help, Merrick bellowed,
Don't celebrate yet!
His feet pounded over the deck, and a wind spiraled faster and faster around him. Evrain raced just behind.
The thing's still not dead!
Merrick reached Safi. His wind grabbed her clothes, her hair.
It'll be back.
And,
Evrain inserted, motioning at the horizon.
We still have a fleet of Marstocks coming our way. Not to mention a second sea fox.
Isolt grabbed Safi by the sleeve and tugged her away from the rail.
It's coming, fast, and for the front this time.
Brace yourselves, Merrick roared. I'll use the power to carry us.
The sea fox hit. The ship rocketed skyward. And as Safi's feet left the deck, as the world became glowing clouds and purple haze, Merrick's wind engulfed them. In a tumble of air, Merrick flew the four of them to the Jana. They crashed to the forecastle with no grace and copious pain. But Safi didn't have time to check for injury. When she searched for Isolt and found her clutching her arm several paces away, Safi also caught sight of a fire. No, four fires. The barrels of chum were aloft and aflame. Heat rolled off them, as did the stench of roasting fish, and nearby was Cullen. His breath came in punctuated gasps, and his eyes bulged from his head. But he kept his hands out, the barrels aloft, and his magic true.
Cullen!
Merrick yelled, already on his feet and sprinting for the drum.
Get the first barrel in position!
He yanked up a mallet and then waited while the closest flaming barrel flipped and floated before the drum. Merrick pounded the mallet. Air punched out and grabbed hold of the barrel. It sped over the water, still burning bright. Then it splashed down before the nearest Marstocki galleon.
"Next barrel!"
Merrick called, and moments later, the second one launched out. Then the third and the fourth. Each one splashed in front of the Marstocks.
"It's leaving,"
Isolt said. Her gaze followed under the ship and then beyond, toward the now sunken Chum.
"It's chasing the barrels."
"They are creatures of carnage," Evrain said,
and Safi jumped. She'd forgotten all about the monk, who slouched wearily nearby.
"They like the taste of charred flesh."
Safi kept her eyes on the water, watching as two black shadows sped away from the boat, then erupted from the waves in the distance. They attacked the flaming barrels, tangled and fought for the Chum. All the while, the Marstocki galleon sailed closer, right for the sea foxes. For a brief second, Safi almost pitied the Marstocks, whom she doubted had Chum to catapult away for distraction. But the moment passed when she caught sight of Isolt, sweating and wincing. As Safi turned her attention to helping Isolt, a wind, a magic wind, swept over the Jana and hauled into her sails. With a resistant groan, the warship set off to the east. 26. Despite the tiny painstone and fire witch healer's work, Isolt's arm pulsed with a low, insistent pain, and she found it hard to remain stoic as the gray Jadansi and distant shore melted past. A magic wind from the admiral and his first mate practically lifted the Jana off the sea in a race to carry her from the Marstocks. Isolt and Safi sat on the forecastle, their lungs billowing for air, and Isolt kept glancing at Evrain beside them. She couldn't help it. This woman had guided her, saved her, really, 6.5 years ago. She was both everything Isolt remembered and nothing at all. The memory of Evrain had been so angelic and taller, but real Evrain was scarred and toughened and textured, not to mention a whole half a head shorter than Isolt. But the monk's hair, that was as glossy and radiant as Isolt recalled, a halo fit for the moon mother. Isolt broke her curious gawk. It was hard to stare for long. Evrain and Safi and everyone else wore threads of 1,000 brilliant shades. They pressed down on Isolt no matter where her eyes landed. On sailors who were terrified or triumphant, who were giddy off violence or ready to collapse with exhaustion. And then a few nearby threads shivered with revulsion. Their owners had spotted Isolt's skin and eyes. None seemed hostile, though, so Isolt blocked them out. After what might have been hours or minutes, the Jana began to slow. The magical wind stopped entirely, leaving a hole in Isolt's ears where it had roared, a tenderness on her skin where it had kicked. Only a natural breeze carried the ship now, and a full moon shone overhead. "Welcome to Nubrevna," Evrain murmured. Isolt pushed to her feet, the painstone briefly flaming bright, and shuffled to the bulwark. Safi and Evrain followed. The land was not so different from the coast north of Venyatsa City. Rocky, jagged, pounded by wild waves. But in place of forests, large white boulders dotted the cliff tops.
"Where are all the trees?" Isolt asked.
"The trees are there," Evrain answered tiredly. "But they do not look like trees anymore."
With a snap, she unbuckled her cleaver's sheath. Then she plucked an oily cloth from her cloak. Safi's breath hitched.
"Those aren't boulders.
are they?
She turned to Evrain.
They're tree stumps.
Hi, the monk answered. Dead trees do not stand for long when a